นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะบุตธังธัมมังสังฆังนมัสสามิOkay, so Saturday night talk. Something that I recently read or came across was referring to something that Krishnamurti said that enlightenment is an accident, or by realizing enlightenment is an accident, but meditation makes us accident prone. And it's interesting to reflect on, in the sense that you can't just sort of make it happen according to one's wishes, or even you start conceiving of, what is enlightenment anyway. It starts getting complicated and sort of starts to recede away from one. But the practice, cultivation of the mind, is something that we can be attending to, and we set up the conditions so that set up the conditions in our favor so that we're actually able to experience for ourselves that quality of peace, of freedom, of a liberation. And Buddha, of course, looked on things as a lot less random, and had a very deep and clear understanding of the nature of the mind, nature of reality. And there's a sutta where the Buddha says that the mind is luminous, but it is stained by adventitious defilements, or defilements that come and go, or are visitors to the mind. And it's because we don't understand that that the practice doesn't bear fruit so much. We take the different moods of the mind, likes, dislikes, reactions, the different defilements that we experience, and we take that to be ourselves. We take them to be permanent. It's like when we experience aversion, ill will, and we think, this is the way it is, and we act out on it, we get caught up in it. We have desire and craving for something, and we say, this is really what's going to fix me, this is what's going to make my life, this is what's really needed, and we take it to be reality, truth. And of course, in that way, then there's no training. And the same with doubt and confusion, and we assume that is stable. This is what is really true and real. So we end up continually mired in those qualities. But to recognize and understand that, as I said, the mind is luminous, but it is stained by these defilements that come and go, and we can understand them. We can We can work with them. We can put them into the proper context, and not identify with them, not feed them, not support them, not get entangled in them. So then they can come and go, and they will come and go. And it's like when this very senior monk Lupu Dun, you know, he's very old, very very respected. He's very senior disciple of Ajahn Mun, and considered by most people accomplished, enlightened, and this person asked him, you know, "Oh, venerable sir, do you still have anger?" And he said, "Yes." "Ah, how can that be? And everybody says you're enlightened." He says, "Well, it's there, but I don't pick it up. I don't identify with it. I don't see it as something worthy of identifying with." So it's a point of Dhamma that is important to recognize. You know, there's going to be moods that come into the mind. There's going to be habits from the past, but they come in and they go out of the mind, and they don't have to be identified with. They don't have to be fed, and because they're seen in their true light, then they can just arise and cease according to their conditions. And they don't affect the mind. Because it's that the mind is luminous. That's its true nature. So that identifying or being able to make a choice, you know, do I make a choice between the luminous mind or the defilements that come and go? And that's what wisdom and knowledge allows one to make, that choice of, I think I'll pick the luminous mind. It makes more sense. It feels a lot better. But we tend to invite these defilements come and go, and then we invite them in. We sort of come and it's like they knock on your door and you invite them in for coffee and a chat and look after them. You know, "Oh, can we give you some cake?" And they end up staying forever. And then you wonder, "Oh," and you complain about it. And come to the Ajahn and say, "Oh, I have these defilements." I say, "Well, you invite them in and look after them and treat them well. And they're going to hang around. They're going to stay with you." In the scriptural language that the Buddha uses, when he speaks of these adventitious defilements, it's akandukha. Akandukha is like a visitor. Akandukehi upakilesehi. So it's like these visitors. And we get fascinated with the visitors, we get excited over the visitors, we get upset and irritated by the visitors, we get bored by the visitors and then want them to be annihilated. And all of that is sort of like the different forms of desire and craving and reactions of the mind. So that we end up entangled in them, and so that we lose the ability to recognize and to abide in that luminous mind. And this is where the practice lies, is in being able to recognize more clearly where does that dukkha arise? Where is that dissatisfaction, right? Where does that pain arise? Where does that discomfort arise? Where does that discontent arise? So that it can be let go of, it can be released, it can be relinquished. There's a discourse where the Buddha points to or gives a simile of children playing in sandcastles. He said it's like inevitably they're with children, they'll play in sandcastles and they'll make all sorts of things, and while they're doing it they get really fascinated and enjoy it and have a tremendous amount of fun doing it. But then inevitably there's, you know, you get lose interest, and then they break up the sandcastle and they lose the fascination for it. You see, especially as a child who grows up more, you know, doesn't like playing in the sand anymore, and it's not so much fun. So that was, you can scatter it and it's not upset. But of course, there's a point in time where the beginning where they're playing with it, and if they did break, and it'd be a real, or they got scattered somehow, it'd be really upset, be really maybe even inconsolable. But you know, as you grow up, you get older, then you're playing in sandcastle doesn't lose interest and lose that desire, that craving, that fascination. And the Buddha then goes on to, you know, extend the simile into ourselves, in the sense that you know, we view our body, feeling, perceptions, mental formations, consciousness, in the same way that children view sandcastles. Where we have desire, we have craving, we have lust, we have fascination, identification with them, and it's all very exciting and wonderful. But whenever something goes wrong, or there's some separation from what we like, or something happens that we don't like, then we get upset, and there's suffering there. So that our life as adults isn't all that different from children playing with sandcastles. But we have the opportunity to grow up, to mature, to look on the experience of the body and the mind in its true nature, in its true light, and understand its limitations, the ways that it is fraught with difficulty, and we can relinquish that. We can look back on it. It isn't as if one conceives a dislike or disgust toward it. It's just sort of like it's not fascinating anymore. It isn't that interesting anymore. Isn't that compelling? So that we can relinquish, we can step back from that kind of fascination, so that we experience a real sense of peace, experience a real sense of freedom, because we're seeing things in their true light. We're willing to relinquish that craving, that desire, tanha. So that word tanha, as desire, is always the desire of the mind enveloped in its delusions and complications. So that learning how to understand that nature of those delusions and complications that are part and parcel of the unenlightened mind. And that's where making oneself accident prone is helpful. Learning how to develop the conditions that lead to a sense of stability and maturity. And that's the whole path of the practice is one that lays that foundation. And the whole path is one that each facet of it supports each other, so that they developing of generosity, of giving, of dana. That's a way of countering the tendencies of desire, of craving at that level, the tendencies towards selfishness or self-centeredness. Is learning how to give, learning how to help, learning how to share with others. There's a freedom that comes when we're able to relinquish. Developing of virtue or of integrity, a restraint in our actions and speech that are harmful, that are create suffering for others, sort of things that are maybe dishonest or vindictive, so that being able to establish that the oneself in the precepts on that level of that level of restraint. There's a sense of well-being and happiness that comes from that, coming from restraint. Knowing that one has held back impulses that are unskillful, and then also there's a happiness that comes when one lives in a way that embodies integrity and trust, so that there's a decrease of suffering because of that. There's a quality of peace that arises on that level. Cultivation of loving kindness, of compassion, of forgiveness. Well, those are all sort of qualities that bring the heart up to a level of spaciousness and an abundance, starting to move into exalted states of mind that are kindly, that are compassionate, that have a gentleness to them. These are very bright states of mind. Of course, there's a happiness that's there, of freeing the heart from suffering. There's a discourse where the Buddha is saying, to be able to even develop a finger snap of loving kindness, one is moving in the direction of fulfilling the path. The path of the Buddhas, so that motivation to direct attention to these qualities of kindness, of forgiveness, of compassion, these tend to brighten and expand them. The mind becomes very expansive, and that's a freedom from suffering. There's a happiness there that is far more satisfying than what we gain through material benefit or possessions, and cultivation of just mindfulness, of putting forth effort, meditation on a more formal aspect of learning how to settle the mind, bring the mind to a place of stillness and clarity. There's a quality of well-being and happiness there that is, unsullied. It's very bright. The Buddha talks of the happiness born of concentration, of sort of a stability of mind, and that's a happiness that is really supports the path of a practice, supports the steadiness of mind that allows it to see things in their true nature. And that's where the cultivation of discernment, of wisdom, being able to recognize things in their true nature. And that doesn't come from sitting around and thinking about it. It's that discernment and insight into the nature of things is built on that foundation of generosity, of kindness, of restraint, of integrity, of that willingness to relinquish the things that agitate the mind. Those tendencies to get caught, like the children with the sandcastle, either in the fascination and excitement of having it, building it, creating it, possessing it, or in the disappointment when it's upset that comes when it's a sandcastle inevitably falls apart. So that stability of mind and clarity that rises above, and that insight is possible in just seeing things in their true nature. It's easy to look at the Buddhist teachings, it's anicca, dukkha, anatta, sort of impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, non-self, that's all we need to do, and it's true, but it's that reflection on impermanence, instability, uncertainty, changing nature of things, seeing it, how pervasive it is, and then really bringing it into the heart and touching the heart as it's clear and still and steady. And that there's a perception of freedom that arises that no longer tends to entangle itself in the external signs and characteristics of things. And it's not some disassociated psychosis. This is how seeing things in their true nature feels like. I've been just entangled in the appearance of things. I've made all these assumptions through the surface characteristics of things. And it's like when Ajahn Chah recounts it, a time of in his practice when he was his meditation was very steady, very strong, and then he kept having this, bumping up against this obstacle, and then he went and paid respects to a senior student of Ajahn Mun, and stayed with him for a while up on a particular mountain, in a particular mountain range in northeast of Thailand. And then when he said, when he came down, and then it just felt light and bright, and he'd really been able to shed something. And then when he was wandering and spent the night at a monastery, and then everything appeared as it did before, but it didn't have the same effect on him. He was able to step back from the assumptions and so you look at something and it's a kettle, but it's not. It's a bell, and it's not. It's a pot of plants, but it's not. Things aren't what they appear to be. And of course then it's internalizing that, and sort of in the same way that this body, this mind, this sense of identity of who one thinks one is, it's there, but it's not. It can be relinquished. We tend to experience things on the surface and get entangled in them and create suffering. Suffering for ourselves, suffering for others. So this cultivation to make ourselves accident prone it's not just meditation as a formal technique. It's a developing of a life of clarity and investigation, recognizing the implications of impermanence or inconstancy. Yeah, recognizing the impermanence we keep coming up against dukkha in the sense of unsatisfactoriness, a sense of stress, a sense of difficulty, a sense of there being suffering. But when it's seen, yes, it's like that, but it can be relinquished, it can be let go of. And when it's seen in its true nature, what arises is then a sense of release from that habit of craving, the habit of desiring, the habit of trying to always manipulate conditions to get things as one would like them. Can really be comfortable and content with the way things are. And it doesn't mean you don't do anything, but the choices are a lot more skillful. The choices are a lot more apparent. So that being able to understand things in their true nature gives us this opportunity for really living a skillful life. And this isn't something that is some distant, impossible task that one defers into some distant future. And the Buddha is saying, this is a here and now truth. This is a present moment reality. We can experience this, and we can cultivate the conditions that will foster an opportunity for experiencing it, and to be interested in that, pay attention to it, and to not get caught in just playing in the sandcastles, or like there's a northeastern kind of saying and an aphorism. It's sort of like a blueberry or a blackberry. It's fruit. They say, don't dally along the way picking the blackberries and the blueberries. It's getting dark. You have to get home. And it's in this way don't waste a lot of time with things that aren't really that fruitful, that of importance. Life isn't a long time. Use your time skillfully. Put the effort into practice now. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.
Handvayam dakthaya stukaram dadase.